This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. And today I am super excited because we have the man that everyone in the world knows. And if you don't know him, I don't know what's wrong with you. You must be living underneath the rock. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome my colleague, my close friend, Dr. Alan Glazier. Dr. Glazier, how are you doing today, man?
Daryl, I am so psyched to be here. It took you a long, long time to get me on here. And you used to not be my favorite optometrist, but now you are. So thanks for having me.
Well, it feels good to be your favorite optometrist, man. I take that as an honor and a blessing as well, my man. How's your day been?
You gaslit all of us to believe that with the name of this podcast. So.
How's your day been, man? And how's your week been? I mean, we're here at Friday. You know, it's time to celebrate and relax. And hey, how about we cheers, man, to the week?
Cheers. Not coordinated, by the way.
But how's everything been?
You know, glasses half full guy. I try and keep everything, you know, on the up and up. Make the best out of whatever situation is around. I'm pretty blessed, have a good life. And, you know, I keep busy. But the difference between now and like 10 years ago is I'm keeping busy with the things I love. And I've said no to a lot of the things I don't love. I've worked my life in a way that, you know, I've unsubscribed to a lot of stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. You have to. If you want to stay sane,
it's simple and it's not ideal because I like to travel. I like to eat well out at restaurants, and that's not happening. But it's all good. Absolutely. Thanks for asking. How about you? Yeah.
Man, this week has been it's been great. It's been exciting, rewarding. You know, I work for my eye doctor, and we've been doing a lot of great things. To really take eye care to the next level, especially in 2021. So I'm super excited just to be a part of an organization that can really just make lives better just in general. So I'm super excited about some of the things we have going on there and super excited about Defocus Media. Jen and I have had some great calls this past week where we have some big things in motion. And, you know, I'm one of the co-founders of Black Eye Care Perspective. And, you know, we have some great things moving on that end and some great things that I would love to touch on with you today that, you know, you have really changed the game of eye care and have made a big impact at your school. So I really want to touch on that a little later on. But, sure. You know, there are some folks that are not familiar with who you are. And I don't know how, but, you know, let's just give the story of Alan Glazier. You know, where are you from? Where did you go to school? Tell us a little bit more about yourself, man.
You know, a mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in bacon. That's what I like to describe myself. So I went to a university. I'm from the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C. I grew up there. I lived elsewhere, but I came back to practice. Went to University of Maryland. I'm a proud Terp, and I have a son who's a freshman there now, which I'm really excited about. Went to NECO, which is part of our conversation tonight.
Yeah.
And I lived, then I came back here, and I've been here pretty much since. Loved the D.C. suburbs. It's a great area. Economically, it never feels the pangs of the economy. And when times are good, they're better than good. And then, you know, we're 2 hours from Philly and 2 hours from New York City, where I'm there all the time, and 2 hours from a beach. And I got three airports all equidistant from me, so I can get out of here anytime I want. So I like it.
So it sounds like you're selling where you live, man. We all need to move and be around you, basically, is what you're telling me.
You're not too far away. You're down, you know, you're about 4 hours away, and we can meet in Virginia Beach and have a good time sometime.
There you go. I'm down for that. Well, you know, I would love to just really pick your brain and just understand, why did you start ODs on Facebook? I mean, this is a platform that has really change the eye care industry completely. I mean, you've been able to put together a platform where eye care professionals, just not locally, not just in the United States, but globally, can come together, have conversation, learn from each other, vent their frustrations, and come together as a team and as a family. I would love to just know, where did this concept come from? How did it take place? Just give us an overview of it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so thanks for that. I don't mean to be modest, but I'm not the originator of forum-like conversations for optometrists. The godfather in optometry is Walt Mayo. And Walt had this, but it was when he did it, when he started it, and maybe even as early as the late 80s, early 90s, I guess it was early 90s, he had it was a listserv kind of thing. So it came in your inbox. There wasn't social media. And then in the mid 2000s, there is another forum. I'm not going to mention it because this is the genesis for creating ODUs on Facebook, was an experience I had on there that I wasn't that happy with. And, you know, they do what they do and they're still around and good for them, but it's a forum. Then from the listserv, they went to the forum style, where you log in forum, where you went to meet up with your colleagues. And this was kind of, and they even described themselves as the Wild West, you know, where there was no moderation, there were no rules, everything went for a long time. And, you know, it was hard to engage in there for me because there was a lot of upsetting stuff that happened in there. There was a lot of talks about political things. There was a lot, anything you can think of that you wouldn't want in an optometry conversation happen in there without any kind of moderation. And it gets frustrating after a while because I like to have fun just like anyone else. I have thick skin like anyone else. Right. But in a, you know, we are a group of experts. Everyone in ODs on Facebook is an expert, and they have really valuable stuff to add to the conversation. Now, if the conversation is going in a direction that's ugly in one way or the other, there are a group of people who enjoy engaging that way, but the bulk of people don't like to engage that way. So they sit on the sidelines. If they're there at all, they sit on the sidelines and they don't engage. And all that expert information is lost. It just doesn't happen. And I realized this, and Facebook came around, and I was early on the Facebook because I was early. My whole gig in optometry was marketing and social media and search optimization.
Right.
And I got into Facebook. I'm like, this is a great place to host a forum. But what I'm going to do, and literally on the back of a napkin, I wrote everything I didn't like that went on in that group, and I created a guideline about it. Number one is no haters. Number one, you cannot insult somebody outright personally in there. I'm like, how am I going to moderate that? But you know, I didn't know it would be big. I thought, well, I'll tell you what it was going to be. Then number two was no discrimination of any type. And number three, but still to me, like a core guideline, because it happened more frequently than discrimination, thank God, was political comment. I don't want to talk. If you're an OD, I don't want to talk politics with you necessarily unless you're a close friend, right? No interest. Right. I want to talk clinical practice management and have a little fun, but not at anybody's expense. And that became my tagline for this. And it seems like a lot, it worked because nobody is marginalized on there. And that's why the conversation levels are so high, is everybody is, you know, we put in the time to moderate it from day one. On day one, I invited like 40 of my podium speaker, thought leader, author friends. You probably know all those names. They're the 50-ish year old crowd like me who's going out while you young people are coming in. And I didn't think it would get much bigger than that, to be honest with you, but I also didn't know that you could invite people. So I set it up. I put the guidelines up. I made an intro paragraph. The first thing I ever did saying what I just told you, I went and I saw like 3 hours of patients. I came out, there were 120 members, you know, people inviting people. And from there, it was just through the roof. So I think I was in the right place at the right time. Another thing that helped me was that people were in Facebook all day. It was up on their screen. They didn't have to go log in.
Right.
It was just there. And so in between patients, as it got interesting, the content got better. They would just go there. And I've done polls. People have said they spend a combined half an hour of their entire day looking at that. And that's a big compliment to me. Like, I love that. Another thing they tell me is, not to run on with this, but people come up to me and they'll say, oh, I'm on ODs on Facebook, but I never comment. I hope you don't mind. I'm like, that's not what I want. What I want is to influence everyone, not personally. Like, I want the group to influence everyone. And if you're on there, I'm happy. It's like you can be a fly on the wall, but I'm thrilled you're there.
Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic, man. I mean, I've I've seen and I've watched it grow over my time being on there, and you've just done a phenomenal job. I mean, you're over what, 42,000 members now? I mean, that's phenomenal. Just to know that there's a platform for my profession, my colleagues, on all levels, to be able to go to and learn and put information out there for other people to understand more about whatever I may have going on is just fantastic, man. Because there's a lot of professions that don't have a platform like that. And one thing I must give you kudos on is I love how you moderate that forum. You do not take any BS. If someone's doing something that's not right or something that's just completely wrong, you call them out and you kick them out. And I think it's huge because you're not showing any favoritism in regards to that. And for me, that's a big deal because I like to be in a safe community and not see any type of discrimination or hatred or anything of that nature. So that's one thing that I do really love about the platform in regards to what you've created.
Well, thank you. You know, unfortunately, it happens, but my goal is to get to it before anyone sees it. And when I can't, I ask people to understand that if you see something in there that you feel shouldn't be in there, the only reason it's in there is because nobody reported it to me. And I don't see everything. I have a staff. I have two staffers who look at it, you know, during waking hours. They're both East Coast people. So there's a time when no one's looking at it.
No, right? Everyone's going to be like, West Coast. Do, 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 do.
Right? Okay, if you post between midnight and 6 a.m., you're going to get away with something. You might not be in the group anymore in the morning when I see it. We have systems set up that Facebook provides the group moderators tools to moderate too. So if you report something, it'll archive it until the moderator gets a chance to look at it. And that's really helpful. So I ask members to understand, like I get people all the time saying to me, you know, oh, you didn't do this. And I'm like, well, I didn't see it. There's 5 million posts a year in there, you know? Yeah. Right, if you see, Tony says, if you see something, say something. Hi, Tony, good to see you.
No, I gotta get Tony on the show, man. Tony, he's just one of those guys that he's just always full of good energy. He always says the right thing. You can tell he's just a positive guy. Tony, I need you on the show, man. We're going to get you on here sooner than later. So I really like his energy.
He's an interesting guy, too. He served in the military. Thank you for your service. We appreciate that as well. I love that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one thing that I wanted to ask you about ODs on Facebook is, I've been meaning to ask you this forever. What has been one time or just one comment that just really changed your life? Because there's so much content that goes on there. Some of it can really touch your life and really change your life. But like, what piece has really changed your life and made you change how you practice, change how you maneuver across the world, and just change who you are as a person?
That wasn't in the preview questions. You know, I don't know that I'm going to be able to come up with one thing right now on the spot, but I can tell you that I built the forum for my use as a grunt OD in the trenches, and I learn from it every day. Even still, I go there like all the members do, without my admin hat on, to learn. And you know, there have been things that happened clinically. There have been things that happened practice management wise in there, and there have been things personally in there that have moved me. I you know, maybe I can pick out one. I don't know if this is the most, but many years ago we had a member who tragically died, and it was our first time we ever did a GoFundMe, and the community came together around this for this person's family, and it was so beautiful, and it really. Even though that I'd never used it for that before, it made me see that if I was careful and if I did it the right way, that when the profession or the doctors really needed someone, we could be there for them and we would come together. Like recently we did a GoFundMe for the practices that were hurt by the riots, and we raised $42,000+ for them, which I still have to distribute. I have it in a money market. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. I didn't think about, you know, they're all different sizes. They had all different damage. It's like a big math problem, but
yeah,
community for ideas. And they gave me some, and I'll be distributing it in the next few weeks. But point being is that we can come together. There's a power in this, and it's not a power that has to be harnessed for my good or anyone's particular good, but it can be, and it can be harnessed for the industry's good. So I would say those were some of those instances.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that and feel and vibe with those two instances there as well. You know, I would love to know what's new with ODs on Facebook. What does the future hold? I mean, you're huge, man. I mean, like you're known globally. I mean, more can you actually do?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You want to keep moving the needle. You got 42,000 people. You got 7 out of 8 optometrists in the country in there.
Yeah.
What can you do, right? But right. You still want to advance things and drive value. And now that, you know, I sold my practice 2 years ago to Kepler Vision, which is a company that I'm very proud to be one of the founders of. And we're working hard to make changes in the industry as well that benefit young ODs looking to practice full scope optometry or to provide opportunities to young ODs to practice full scope optometry. And that's a big part of my life. I do a lot of work on that, but when I'm not working on that, I'm thinking exactly like you're saying, I'm trying to figure out what can we do. And we have a website, odsonfb.com. But we've come up some concepts to modernize it and make it a better experience. And we're building that out. I invested $50,000 in this project and we'll be launching that in early January, hopefully. It's a little delayed, but you know, everything, what's not delayed these days with Corona, right? And then a web, and it's under a really cool brand. I don't want to ruin it here. This would be a great place to tell everybody about, but I'm not going to do it here yet. But I'm doing a webcast. I'm going to be doing what you're doing, a webcast, which I'm excited about. I built a studio in my basement.
Nice.
Because I've had the time and I had this concept, and I'm really excited to launch that. That'll probably launch maybe. Right now, I'm learning how to use the software, but as soon as I get that down, we'll launch maybe January 2, maybe in a month. We'll see. But yeah, those are the two big initiatives we're psyched about.
Awesome. Well, what I'd like to do now is just really kind of switch gears, because you are very instrumental in your school, New England College of Optometry. I mean, you sit on different boards. You're always active. You speak there to the students. I mean, you're very, very hands-on when it comes to New England College of Optometry. Recently, you know, as a matter of fact, today, there was an article or news or a press release that went out about scholarships to support the diversification of the student body. And when I saw that, my heart melted. I was like, man, this guy, he created a platform to connect all optometrists globally. And now he wants to give back to the underrepresented to really give them opportunities to, you know, have funding for school and different things of that nature. I would love for you just to, number one, talk about your relationship with Dr. Howard Purcell. And then number two, really talk about the scholarship and what all it entails.
Sure. So you're a proud NECO grad, NECO 93. I'm showing how old I am now. had a great experience there. I love the college. I was there when some legends were running it. Larry Clausen, High Caymans, and these are names that some of the older people will remember, but these guys were real gentlemen, real mensches, and they had a real good set of values. It was a great place to go. Howard and I had a relationship through corporate optometries with companies throughout his career that we connected, and we also had built a personal relationship because we have a lot in common. We have good laughs together. We connect, and he ended up, you know, the president of my college. I'm like, I knew he went there. It worked out really well, and that really drove me to get involved again. I mean, all those years in between there, I can't tell you that I really did much with the college, but I had reached out to them, and you know, maybe they reached out to me, but nothing ever happened there. So the combination of me getting to an age where I can look back and appreciate what they did for me, and I'm in a position where I can help, both with experience and financially. It just all came together around the issues that our country has faced lately related to racism. I've had some experiences inside and outside of optometry that kind of led me to align with what you're doing with your initiative. My heart melted with your 13% initiative. And one of the things, and we'll get into this deeper because you asked me to spill my heart out today, and I will do that. But you know, I've always looked back. My optometry school class was like 105 people. We had, 3 or 4, I think, African Americans. And I always thought about that. All these years, I just go back to that. I just didn't understand it, but I also didn't look any deeper into it because I was in my mode. With everything that's coming around lately, I looked back at that. I looked at our school. I looked at what you were doing. I'm like, well, let's help my school lead that way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. And, you know, with Black Eye Care Perspective, you had mentioned that earlier, and a 13% promise. For those that may not be aware of that, with Black Eye Care Perspective, it was co-founded by myself and Dr. Adam Ramsey. If you don't know who Dr. Adam Ramsey is, he's the guy, you know, play test, not checkers. He's everywhere. He's the man that has all the answers. Go buy his book. I'm always giving him a plug about that. But we really created Black Eye Care Perspective to create, you know, lifelong relationships with African-Americans in the eye care community. And we wanted to just really see more Black representation in eye care. So we came up with what we call the 13% promise. And you may be asking, where does that number come from? And that number is basically the percentage of Black representation in the U.S. And we're strong believers that, you know, with anything that's out there, you should reflect what the population reflects. So with the 13% promise, we want to see that 13% all across the board, you know, whether it's student representation in optometry schools, whether it's key opinion leaders, whether it's eyewear designers, whether it's corporate folks, whether it's executive boards, just want to have that representation. That way we can give our perspective and just make a more diverse representation just in eye care, because we all know when you have more diversity, you're going to perform better. I mean, stats and research has proven this year in and year out. So for those that are unaware of it, check out www.blackeyecareperspective.com, and you can pledge to the 13% promise and gain more information there as well. You know, in regards to the scholarship that you have, if you don't mind just kind of breaking that down a little bit more in detail, so those that have seen it and saw it today can just get a better understanding of what the goal is and, you know, how it's going to be used in general.
Yeah. You know, is this the part where you want me to get into my heart?
Yeah, man, fire away, man. Like, everyone knows Alan Glazier, but they don't know him how I know you. So I want you to really, you know, like, have this conversation as if the cameras are off and it's you and I having this phone call or this face-to-face conversation, man.
I want you to think, I'm gonna go back to my history about this in a minute, but while I'm talking about this, I want to frame it with something that has always, that has more recently bothered me that people can connect with, and that is our and not from a political perspective at all, but if you look at our last president, okay, who I think is a gentleman and a mention, had a beautiful family, and this guy has a Black father and a white mother, but he's Black, and nothing wrong with being Black. I'm, you know, in like he's a Black man, but he is a multiracial person, but he's viewed by a huge segment of our society under that lens that they look at, unfortunately, as something that's not as good as somebody who's not Black. With through that lens, we're going to go back now and look. You know, I went to a high school that was 50% colored and Black and white. I don't know what, I'm not going to use the PC terms because I've got a little whiskey. I don't know what's right. But you know, we had a lot of Asian, we had a lot of African Americans, we had a group of Jews.
The color in general.
Everything there, right?
Yeah.
And I grew up in my group of friends, and this is all stuff I came to realize later, but I grew up not taught purposefully, but just intellectualizing it that I was taught on some level by someone or somewhere that influenced me that there was a difference between people of different skin tones. And at a certain point in my life, I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Scientifically speaking, humans, there's no difference between humans. And then I had this idea in college that I actually still want to do this. If you could get like 100 people of all varying skin tones, from the darkest Nigerian to the whitest albino, and all varying skin tones together on like a soccer field, and have them together holding hands so that between any two people, you couldn't say that is where the color changes. Think about how ridiculous this whole idea of the differences between people based on skin tone. So anyhow, so that kind of drove me into the place where I started noticing this all the time and all the inequities and all that thing. And then in optometry school, I, you know, thinking about those, the four people or three people in my class that, you know, and by the way, Boston was one of, I grew up, I experienced very little racism, a little anti-Semitism, very little racism where I grew up also. But when I went to Boston, that city was crazy racist. I saw it against me and a lot of other people. Everybody right. would come into the city and work during the day together. And at night, they would all go back to their little enclaves. You had the Jews in Brookline. You had Roxbury, where the African Americans were. You had this the Irish in the South. And it was really, really weird. And so I guess it was in the forefront of my mind. And later in life, when Black Eye Care Perspective happened, and I realized, you know, I'd always been thinking about the inequity in my class, it was somewhere I wanted to put my efforts in, especially yeah. in light of everything that happened with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, it all came together for me. And it really, if you look at that whole spectrum of time I talked about, it just all came together to this for me. And it's something, you never know where you want to put your time, effort, or money when it comes to charitable efforts, but this is one place I really wanted to try and make a difference.
Yeah. And it's noticed. You know, the entire eye care community appreciates it. And I think, you know, you're setting standard. You know, if you have a position of influencing, a position of power, and you're doing things that are right, you know, it's only going to make it better for the entire industry. So I definitely applaud you for using your platform to, you know, push and preach the importance of diversity and inclusion and equity and all those different things that are definitely needed in this profession. And I challenge, you know, our colleagues to do the same, because there are different platforms out there, none as big of yours, of course, but, you know, they have influencing power to really make a change. And just because you have that power, doesn't mean that, you know, you're the top deal and all this, that, and the third. What are you going to do with that power? What are you going to do with that influencing that you can have? That is the key. And I thank you, and I take my hat off to you for just really giving, you know, Adam and I and Essence Johnson and Jacoby Cleaver the opportunity to post on that forum, you know, some of the initiatives and things that we have going on, because, you know, we can't do this by ourselves. We need support from everyone. I don't care what background you are, Black, white, purple, green, yellow, orange, whatever your favorite color is. We have to work together as a team. We have to be one big melting pot and grow this profession and push forward, because, you know, eyes are on us, and let's make a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, it did get to a point where it got big enough where I realized I really have to be fair. I've always, you know, it started out as a fair place to share with those rules.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be fair, I got to be fair. I got to do everything the right way. And not everybody's going to view it that way. And I wasn't okay with that at first. But now I don't care what, you know, if I'm doing what I think is right, I don't care what anybody else thinks. I just really don't.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I know at the top of the show, I don't want to hold you too long, because it's Friday. You know, we have these drinks. We want to enjoy our families. I mean, there's not much we could do besides stay in the house.
The longer I'm on here, the more likely dinner's already on the table when I get out.
But I wanted to ask you, you know, like funny story. I mean, I've heard this story, or someone has alluded to it, that, you know, the company that I'm with, my eye doctor, the first location is actually not too far from your office that you sold. Is that true?
Eye Doctor Number One opened up across from my young practice.
Okay.
And it freaked me out. Like, you know, so I'll tell that story. It's a good story. And there's really good lessons for everybody out there. Rob Samet was the guy that founded my eye doctor. He had found another chain of stores before then called Our Eyes in our area. And, Our Eyes, he built, I think, 10 or 15 stores, and he sold it for a lot of money. And then he had a, Rob, if you're listening or you see this, or anyone from my eye doctor, forgive me if I get the story wrong, but he was on a non-compete. And during that time, he spent his time, brilliant businessman, very global thinker, always admired him. I could never think like he thought. And a lot of people, you know, didn't love what he did, but he did his own thing and he did it well. And he drafted all his whole plans from out. And the day after his non-compete ended, he had already had two stores up and ready to go. One was right across the street from my office, and one was in Northern Virginia. I think that's how it went. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to hurt. And yeah, so Rob's model was to generally, he didn't open in the beginning many new locations. He usually bought older doctors' practice and rebranded them. And I knew quickly he would be expanding in the area. And all I could see through my myopic business view was how he was going to hurt my business. But what was interesting was what happened. So I had a big regional independent medical model practice. My model was never in a different location. So always to grow one location as big as I could. And my one location grossed like what, seven locations. If you had seven locations with 1/7 of the headaches, that's how I like to define it, right? So what happened was I was scared, but what happened was the opposite. Actually, it helped me a lot because he started buying up all the other independent practices, and here he created a vacuum of independent practices. Now there are patients out there, and I call them independent loyalists, and these are people who only want independent. So they either seek it out or they end up not being able to find it. They go to something non-independent and they end up seeking it out again eventually. So this vacuum that was created, my practice grew more after my eye doctor started than after anything else in the industry. And they did well, and I did well, and everybody was happy. You know what I mean? So the lesson is, and I talk about this to the students, I'm like, you can go anywhere you want to any city, no matter how many ODs, and practice and do well, as long as you practice the best of your abilities, as long as you're good and you do what you do, because people will bleed into you that way. And I jokingly say, unless you're in Chicago or Houston, where it's super saturated. Of course, those two cities, seriously, like I log in, everybody who joins ODs on Facebook, it's unbelievable how many ODs are in those two cities. But so that's kind of my story with my eye doctor is, it did amazing things. Sue Downs is an amazing business person who really has been with that company since the early, early days, if not day one. I don't
know. Day one. She was the office manager since day one, man. So she's been rocking and rolling, and she's a great leader. And the thing that I really love is just the diversity that we have as far as our C-suite, woman-led, black chief medical officer, woman led with our chief operation officer. I mean, it's just a fantastic organization. And it grew from that one office that you were talking about to now about 650 something. I mean, so like, you know, within X amount of years or a couple decades, man, it's really grown exponentially.
That global view that Rob had, you know, this is what he built a major thing. So yeah, good. You know, everybody has their own mode of practice, and you do the best you can. You never get scared by anybody who competes with you. You just be as good as you can and take care of your patients, and you'll be a success.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Glazier, I just want to, I want to end the show. I always like to ask people at the end of the show, if you could just give one piece of advice to not just students, not just optometrists, but anyone that's in general listening to this interview, what would that piece of advice be?
One piece of advice, gosh.
Yeah, man.
I've got a whole list of stuff that I would go through if I had the chance. But one thing I tell people all the time, one of my philosophies is the only person that can embarrass you is yourself.
Mm.
And if you live that way and you don't worry what anyone has to say about anything that you do, as long as you know you're doing good by people, as long as you have a good sense of humor and thick skin and you don't take anything too personally, because nobody really cares. Just be the best you can be and don't worry about, how you're going to be embarrassed or how you're going to look. If you can just focus on what drives you, what motivates you, taking care of yours while taking care of other people, you're going to have a really good, happy life.
I love it, man. Well, you guys, it's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover, and the man that everyone knows throughout the entire world, Dr. Alan Glazier. Thank you dearly for hanging out with us this evening, and we look forward to hanging out with you next time. You guys stay healthy, stay blessed, stay positive, and until next time, peace. All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars. And make sure you follow us on all social media platforms. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.